Resourcing today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. The Source Bookstore has a new opener. We'll meet him today, Carter Brown, on Scribble. Wow, the Source Bookstore.
Well, yeah, of all the screwiest things that could possibly happen this year, from fires to hurricanes to COVID to this and that, all of a sudden I opened the page of the paper a week ago and discovered that a 23-year-old has bought a bookstore. And I thought, it can't get any stranger than that. What were you up to, Carter?
I just love books, and it just kind of happened that I was in the right place at the right time, and Dan was ready to settle down, stop, you know, working himself so hard. I mean, he's pretty much been one of two people there for the past 30 years right. That he's been there or so, and so, you know, he was ready to take a break, and when I came in and started, I just originally went in and just started helping him, you know, haul stuff so that he didn't have to and organize things so he wasn't down on the floor moving books around, and the more we talked, the more he saw that I was fed up with the working for other people thing, and that I loved books as much as he does, and it felt right for both of us. It just kind of fell into place. It wasn't very much planned at first, you know.
But you know, usually even people who love books take a break. You know, it's like going to church. You get perfect attendance at Sunday school, and then at about 15 or 16, you stop going and you don't go back again till you're in your 30s and got kids of your own. And even people who read, like I did, madly all the way from kindergarten on up through high school, take a 10-year break, and then they get to be 30 and start joining book clubs, and they're back to reading again. 23-year-olds don't typically read.
Yeah.
Do you get any people in their 20s at the bookstore?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I don't know how many of them.
I am. Yeah,
are avid readers, you know. But I do see a lot of younger people coming in, and you know, their tastes are different than what the older people who come in are looking for, you know. And so I've brought a lot of insight to Dan, you know, because I was able to show him new authors and stuff that he wouldn't have maybe stocked because he didn't know it was popular with the younger crowd. And so it's, you know, he was able to show me authors that I didn't know, that
writers, for instance.
Yeah.
Like who?
I don't know. I'm really big into the sci-fi, you know, the sci-fi genre, and authors like Neal Stephenson or Greg Egan, Ted Chiang, any of the newer sci-fi authors that are, I mean, have like cult followings online.
I taught science fiction at Augustana for many years, and I don't recognize a single name you've given me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, Asimov is my favorite. Home, I've got over 140 Asimov books that I've been collecting for the past 6 years. So, you know, I know the classics, and I know all the new stuff. I keep up online.
The Source Bookstore was there when I went to college, and that's back in medieval times.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that it has persisted in that location for so long. And you don't think of bookstores as being permanently, even Borders went away. Barnes & Noble hangs on. But there's, you know, you see used bookstores especially pop up around the neighborhood. We talked to one person whose wife decided she wanted to take over a bookstore. And then she died shortly after, and he didn't know what to do with his books or his building. And I have no idea how it went from there.
Wow.
But the Source Bookstore has been up and running for a long time. So you have clientele already, haven't you?
Yeah. And so far they haven't been too off-put by me. You know, they've all been real accepting that I'm the new face. Dan made sure to introduce me to all of them and to tell them that I take good care of them and that I know what I'm talking about, you know. So I'm glad I haven't been met with any backlash yet of people saying, oh, well, I won't buy books from him. You know, I only bought my books from Dan.
Do you buy books as well?
Yep. We buy, sell, trade.
Oh.
Whatever.
That's quite an enterprise, and the fact that it's been going on so long is a tribute, I guess, to the persistence of books.
Oh, yeah.
I thought we were going to be done with those. Kindles and Nook and all the rest of them coming in were supposed to obviate the need for books. But
they're sort of on the way out, in, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
isn't that interesting? I mean, holding a book, smelling a book. I mean, walking into the source is just like you're walking into a sci-fi world,
yeah,
right? I mean,
it really is.
Given today. And I don't know how you people arrange the books, but you walk down an aisle, you know, you squeeze down an aisle, I guess, and books are falling out at you, and you can hear them say, buy me, buy this one, right? And it's incredible. I haven't been to the source for a couple of years because it's hard for me to get over there now, but that was a lifesaver when I came to teach here in 1960 to discover a good old-fashioned Chicago, you know, Seattle, New York-type bookstore. And those out there have gone out of existence.
Yeah.
So how does the source do it?
I don't know. It's it just has, like, a character, I think. I mean, there are people I've talked to that have moved away, and they're like, you bought the source? You know, I go there every single time I'm back in town to visit my family, you know? It's... For the people who know about it, it's a landmark of the Quad Cities for them. It's a landmark of home. It's the used bookstore for them. And then there's still people who come in and they go, wow, I've walked past this every single day for years, and I never knew it was a giant bookstore in here. You know?
You almost never advertise, do you?
I think there's a couple ads in the Quad City Times that Dan has been running, but I've started pushing it on Facebook, like, you know, taking out ads and stuff to try and get more, because everyone's on their phones right now.
Right.
And honestly, this whole, the whole COVID and people staying home thing, I think people got sick of looking at screens, because we've actually seen a lot of people wanting books again, like recently, because I think they realized they didn't have anything to do one day. They were tired of playing video games or looking on their phone. So they grabbed that book they've had on the shelf forever and they read it and they were like, oh, hey. This is pretty fun.
Right.
And then they started doing it more and more again. And then they were like, oh, I read all the books I have. I better go down to the source and get some more.
Well, plus you can see a program in an hour, but it takes days to read a book. And if you're stuck inside, it's better to read a book.
But the great advantage is you don't have 3 minutes of commercials after each page.
Yes, that is true.
Television is just terrible now. We know that, you know, you watch television, people don't think about this, but you watch television with a vacant mind. It just pours stuff into you. And that's why advertising on television is so attractive. And now that people are stuck indoors, advertisers are thinking, wow, here we go. And, of course, the TV stations are happy to shove aside content for advertising. So it is infuriating to try to watch television these days.
I agree.
But, so when did you first find the Source Bookstore?
I was probably about, I mean, I guess probably about 16 or 17 once I could drive and get around. I mean, I remember being 13, and I lived over in Bettendorf, and I'd ride my bike to the Duck Creek, the book rack, when it was there in Duck Creek. Because it was just, you know, a five-minute bike ride for me, and I'd ride over there and get books, and, you know, I was 12, 13, 14, riding over there. And so once I could drive, I looked up bookstores, you know, and I found the source and I started going down. So I would see Dan over the past, you know, 7 years of my life and coming in, always buying a bunch of books and chat with him. And I didn't know his name for probably the first 5 years, you know, he was just the guy at the bookstore, but I'd go in and talk to him and he'd always be like, oh, you're buying this. This is an interesting one, you know. And I was always buying things that what the other kids coming in weren't buying, you know.
Right.
You know, we had Dan on the air, two or three years ago, I guess, talking about the long history of the Source Bookstore. And I guess with his retiring, it'll continue. And do you see yourself still in that bookstore 20 years from now?
I hope so. I really do. Yeah, it would be a dream come true for me if that would be the case.
Well, then let's tell people to Carter wants to see you.
Yeah.
What do you? How do you handle what most a bookstore like Barnes & Noble? They will stock up on several copies of the bestsellers. Do you get bestsellers as well? Do you buy books that way, or do you strictly trade back and forth?
Yeah, I buy popular books, mostly just to try and make sure I have something for everyone that comes down. But I don't try and – I don't go out of my way to look for them. It's more so when someone brings in a box and it's half bestsellers and it's got some, you know, good literature and it's got some good nonfiction, you know, history, military history or something – I'll grab the popular ones along with it, but they're never what I'm looking to get. And I wouldn't go out of my way, really, to try and grab a bunch of James Patterson or Nora Roberts, you know, the stuff you find in an airport. I'm looking for Dostoevsky and Steinbeck, the stuff to really fill the shelves, you know, make it look good.
Well, you know, the trouble is those bestsellers are remaindered in short order. They're on the bestseller list. They pop up. They stay there for a week or two, and down they go. And then down the price goes from $26 to $6.
Yep.
So it seems to me there's a certain volatility in the book business that you have to take into account. Do you follow trade magazines, editor and publisher, things like that?
Yeah, mostly online. There's a couple, like, you know, websites I check, and for a lot of the more contemporary stuff, it's a lot easier to try and price that out and sell it because it's like you said, it's all pretty much worth what it's worth, and it's going to be worth that not long after it comes out. You know, $5-6. The real stuff that I really get down to is, you know, when I get a box of old books and I really got to do some digging and find out, you know, what's going on with this one? Why? What is this book worth? You know, I just yesterday I found I got a box from somebody that I bought from him, and it had an old French Bible in it. That was really cool. And there was this really cool pocket checkbook from 1887, or a pocket calculator, I'm sorry. And so it looked like a little checkbook, and you flip it open, and it had all the tables for, like, determining the value of cattle and grain and hogs by weight. It was all the same price for the weight. So a pound of grain and a pound of cow was the same in this commercial calculator. But it's from 1887. It was really neat, you know, and it folded. It had a little pocket at the back and had, like, math equations. So finding – that's the stuff I really like to dig into and see how much is online. Like, how easily can I find this? And so what would people want to pay for it? And it's all about what it's worth to someone else, not what I think it's worth, you know? Because I can say that this water bottle is worth $1,000, but it doesn't mean you'll pay $1,000 for it, so.
Well, it would seem to me, Carter, the problem is if you're a book lover, you might be paying too much for a book. The business of pricing, I mean, that's, I don't know that that was a skill you brought to the job, but one you had to develop. Is that right?
Yeah, and I mean, I caught on pretty quick to the way to do it. Me and Dan, we would go on book calls, we call them, and you know, we go to someone's house to buy up their books that we want. And the way that Dan taught me how to do it is he goes and he picks the books off the shelves that he's going to want for the store. He piles them on the floor, and then he makes an offer for the lot wholesale, you know, and the first couple times I went with him, he wanted to test me, you know, and so we'd get done pulling all the books, and he'd be like, all right, you come up with your number. What would you offer for this? And I was spot on even with him, like, every time in a row, and he was just blown away by it. And, you know, pricing, I've had to learn a little bit. You know, Dan, I priced some books, and I bought a whole bunch of books from this lady. She was clearing out a storage unit out in Washington, Iowa, and they were all really old. I sat at home every night just pricing them, like putting little sticky notes and what I thought I could put it on the shelf for, and I brought it into Dan. And then Dan went through them all, and he was like, that's good. Nope, this is wrong because, you know, I thought it might be a first edition, but he told me that publisher is only reprints, you know. And so he kind of went through each book and told me how my pricing was, and then I'd sit in the store with him and price, and he would say, no, you don't want to do that. No one's going to pay that for that, you know. And so it just kind of was trial and error, and and figuring it out and seeing what sells, you know, what will people pay for a book?
Well, you know, the terrible thing about selling books, I lost my mind for a period of time and was buying folio books. And we're talking about the cheapest book I think I ever bought from them was $35.
Yeah.
Not a very substantial book. But then I paid $225 for a set. And other books cost in excess of $100. And I think, well, I can't sell these because that means I'll lose terrifically.
Yeah.
And when you buy books, you know, quite often you are seduced by something about the book. And the folio books truly are just beautiful.
Yeah,
beautifully
they are.
Done, made to last forever. But I stopped buying those. I thought this, you know, I could get this in a paperback. Why am I doing this? The whole business of pricing books and buying and selling would seem to me has gotten, I don't know, less than automatic over time. Do you have to keep adjusting your values?
A bit. It is hard. I mean, we essentially, like, you know, we can't really pay more than a dollar for a book.
Right.
Otherwise, it isn't, I can't make anything off of it, you know, calculating in my time and how long it might sit on the shelf. And I have people come down and, or they call and they say, hey, I have a first edition, this book, it's worth $300 online. Do you want to buy it? Well, no, because you know what it's worth and I know what it's worth now. And I can't pay you $300 for it because then I've gotten a book for my own bookshelf.
Right.
I haven't gotten a book that I can make a living off of. And so some people do, they come in expecting a windfall, bringing in all these books, and they think that this old book is worth a lot, but it's just an old book.
Well, a lot of people equate age with value.
With value,
right?
Yeah.
So, this is really old, you know, 1750, and you know, it isn't. Do you have people come into the store checking Amazon prices as they go through?
All the time.
So
yeah.
your competition is things like Amazon, right?
See, and the way that I do is I check the online sites when I'm pricing books, and I figure if I price, I look at what a used, that same book you used online, you can buy it for. Say it's $15 online plus, or with free shipping or whatever.
Right.
Well, I'll put it out for $12.
Okay.
Because then someone is still paying less than they would online, and they've got it in their hand.
Right.
They don't have to wait 3 or 4 or 5 days. It's in their hand. They can go home and start reading it right now. So I try and, you know, I don't want to rob people. You know, I just want to make a living and be surrounded by things I love. So, you know, I'm not gouging the prices because it's a used bookstore or whatever. I'm just putting it out for less than they can find it online so that they're still winning, I'm still winning, and they get to go home with a book today that they can read before they fall asleep tonight, you know?
I've often thought I should just take, I don't know how many, 1,000 or so LPs I still have at home. More than that, I'm afraid. And books all over the place. Just rent a store and go in and start selling to get rid of them. Because, you know, those are the things, sorts of things that when you leave, you know your kids are going to junk them. And so why not dispose of them now? I've given, 5,000 LPs to WVIK when we first opened. And, of course, those are all of a sudden a hot market anymore.
They are, yeah.
Boy, I've seen prices for LPs that I don't believe. But you never know when you're buying and selling, trying to be in the middle of that and still come out in some kind of appreciable shape has to be difficult.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I've seen online a book selling for a price, and I've thought, man, I just sold that book for like $4 the other day. And and all of a sudden I noticed that it's actually worth quite a bit of money online.
Right.
And people are paying. So there's definitely been times where it's like, oh, I let that one slip, you know. But it you win some, you lose some, you know. That's how it goes. And it's all you can do is just keep on going.
Are there times of the day when business picks up more than others? Or is it steady?
Yeah, it's afternoons usually about – probably like right when I get back to the store today, it'll start getting pretty busy. Just yesterday, it seemed like I had everything happen at once. You know, I had people coming in, a couple looking for certain numbers of the Hardy Boys for their grandkid, and someone called and he said he has CDs he's bringing in, and when he showed up, it was like 11 giant tubs of CDs. And more, I thought it was just a box or two, you know. It was like a couple thousand CDs he wanted to sell me, and it was like, you know, I have other people asking me, where's your horror section? And so it was like, it all comes at once, it seems. But it's always fun, you know, I'm always talking about things that I love, so.
So you sell things other than books, huh?
Oh yeah, there's books. There's we have a lot of records. We have a record guy. He's a collector. He's got a whole bunch, and I've been buying records to put in the store. I love music. Music and reading have both been my passions for a very long time. I played guitar since I was 9. I played in a band. My band put out a record. I have it at the store, and so I like to mix all of that, everything, because it's kind of it all goes hand in hand. We've got a bunch of movies. DVDs, VHSs, we have maps that people love to buy, postcards, a whole bunch of magazines, you know, Life back to the 30s, Rolling Stone, old ones, you know. And
yeah, my friend, friend of mine published a magazine, a book, short story. Mostly he wrote Ellery Queen, but he wrote one that was picked up by Playboy years and years ago.
Yeah.
So I had to go and ask Dan, do you have this particular issue of Playboy magazine?
And he probably pulled out the binder and told you.
Yeah, it's got a good story in it, right?
Yeah, he went down to the basement or wherever they keep that stuff, and up he came with it, and I thought, thank you.
There, yep, it's he has a whole binder that keeps track of all of those because, I mean, there's a room down there with every issue several times over, and it's... You just never know who's going to ask for when they need a certain month and a certain date. And the locked rooms in the basement, there's a couple of them. The basement is twice as big as you know. And he kept showing me rooms for months. And I'd be like, there's more? And he's like, oh, yeah. And all the boxes in that corner my dad bought. I've never gotten into them. So there's gold down there for me that I can just dig into. And it's just all mine to look for.
Wow.
It's kind of fun. I feel like a treasure hunter.
Well, actually, that's part of the charm of going to a used bookstore, is just wandering through the shelves and see what's there. And you will find stuff that you didn't know you needed until that moment. And that's the problem with books. I look at the New York Times book review section just a recent week, and I looked through there and thought, no, wait, now I'm not going to buy 6 books, but there are at least 6 that I think I really ought to read. And it goes that way every Sunday, all the Sunday Times. And then the literary journals, they come out with their opinion of books. And the first thing you know, if you're not careful, you're swamped with books. So I'm sorry to tell you this, Carter, but I'm firmly resolved now to stop buying and start reading.
Fair. You know, I always tell people when they ask me why I keep buying more books for, like, you know, for myself, is that I always want more books that I haven't read than I have read, because then I always have something to pick from, you know, because you never know what you want to read next. You have to have choices.
Well, there's a name for that I discovered, tsundoku. It's a Japanese word for books that you buy and never read.
Right.
And I'm afraid I'm guilty of that.
Oh, we all are.
I'm rolled. You don't have a case of Sundoku, do you?
You and I both have in the basement of this building. Probably 1,500 books each sitting in boxes that have been sitting there for years.
Are they still there?
Yes, they are still there.
My goodness.
They are still there. I cleaned out my desk at the college and my shelves and stuff, and I ended up in the basement. Do you have a section of rare books that are separate from your? Do people come in looking for?
Well, there's like a kind of behind the desk. Some is where we keep a lot of like the older books that are rare,
right.
And especially the fragile ones that anyone handling,
right.
They could just destroy it, you know. And then kind of right at the front we have our rare bookshelf, but. A lot of times we just kind of mix them in, assuming that they're not very, very rare.
Right.
And then we also have, like, there's a room downstairs where we keep all of our online listings. And we have almost 3,000 things listed online for – and it's a lot of rare books. The ones that are more expensive are the ones that they wouldn't sell on a shelf here because – there's not the market for it, but someone online will be looking for that book, you know? Like, it'll be like the history of Lake County, Indiana. No one here is going to buy it, but someone online in Lake County, Indiana is going to look up the history of it and find my book.
So the source is sort of open to the world, right?
Yeah, it is. So we keep it down there, and if anyone asks, I can dig around and find what I can for them. And I just found a first edition Mark Twain, first edition, first printing Mark Twain.
Really?
Yeah. Roughing it.
Wow.
All the first edition points. It's first state, which is hard to find. You know, you got to make sure that every misspelling, every punctuation error for a first printing, you can't say something is when it's not.
So how would you go about selling that?
Probably online. That's honestly, it's where most of like the booksellers, the antiquarian book dealers, deal those, you know, extra valuable books, just because it's hard to get, not many true like book collectors come in.
Right.
I have a lot of people who are book lovers,
right,
but the book collectors who are looking to spend money on the exact edition that they want, they tend to look online now because it's easier to find around the country someone who has what you're looking for using the internet.
Yeah, you know, we've talked to the owners of the Book Rack and Brood Books, and
both great places.
I looked in the looked up to see used bookstores, and I found listings for 19, but I don't think there are that many that are active.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's but there are bookstores that persist. And you're in one that has lasted the longest. I know we had an LP collector came through the station here one time, and he was looking for specific rare records, which I happened to have. I'd contributed them to the station, and we sold them. I sold it to him for about $15 an LP, knowing he was going to charge twice that.
Yeah.
I sold him one record that I knew would fetch $800. I sold it for $400. So the station made a little money that day.
Yeah, there you go.
But I haven't seen that guy since. Well, Carter, I must say, you've embarked on an interesting career for yourself.
Yeah.
How do you like it so far?
I like it a lot. It's been very busy. It's a lot of people saw like the newspaper article. And like I said, on Facebook, I started, you know, sharing it with my friends and getting other people to share things and, you know, putting an ad out. And I've gotten our Facebook likes more than doubled since I took over. And a lot of people have been bringing stuff to me. So I have so many books and CDs and records and movies that I have to get priced and put out and got to keep the place looking neat. I've had to learn how to do taxes.
Not too neat.
Not too neat.
No,
oh,
no.
Never. That's impossible. But, you know, it's a lot of work. It really is. But I spent probably 12 hours there several days last week, and I would check the time and say, oh my God, I can't believe it's 9 o'clock already. I got to go home, you know? And it was just, I never check my phone at work. I go there now and it's my day, and so far I love it.
Well, we're going to let you get back to work as we scoot out of here. But Carter Brown, the new owner of the Source Bookstore, sounds like you're having a whale of a time, Carter. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this edition of Scribble. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week and hope you will too for the next edition of Scribble.